My guest, Deborah Harry, has a dual career as a singer and actress. She was the lead singer of Blondie, one of the few new wave bands from the mid-70s that ended up topping the charts. As an actress, she co-starred opposite James Woods in Videodrome. In John Waters' comedy, Hairspray, she was a mother hell-bent on preserving her daughter's position as the most popular girl in high school. And last season on the TV crime series Wise Guy, she played a washed-up singer trying for a comeback. Deborah Harry has been making something of a comeback herself. She took a 4-year hiatus from the music business that was due in part to legal problems and in part to the illness of Chris Stein, her partner professionally and personally. Stein and Harry co-founded Blondie and co-wrote most of the group's songs. Stein is well now, and he plays on Harry's new solo album, Deaf, Dumb, and Blonde. It's the second solo album Harry has done since she returned to recording in 1987. Included on the new record is a remixed version of the song Deborah Harry sang on Wise Guy. It was written by Harry and Stein, and it's called Bright Side. From Deborah Harry's new album, Deaf, Dumb, and Blonde. And Deborah Harry is my guest. When you started recording as Deborah Harry, when you started your solo career after recording as Blondie, did you think of yourself as having like a different persona on stage, a different personality on stage?
Well, I thought of having a broader perspective and that I would be able to do things that were, I felt a little bit limited by the being surrounded by men, and I wanted to do something that was more feminine, or you know, possibly a little bit broader range of emotion.
What was the effect?
Blondie was allowed to do.
What was the effect of you as a performer, as being the woman in a band with all the musicians as men?
Well, I don't know. I sort of treated Blondie as a character, and at the time, I mean, it was sort of like this. I don't know, cartoonish kind of character in a way.
Describe the character.
I can't. I don't really, it's very hard for me to be objective about it. I think that she was, I think mostly what Blondie meant to me was an attitude of being a positive female and taking an aggressive position and not singing songs about, you know, having, you know, a broken heart all the time and you know, all that stuff that was being, you know, sung at the, in those days. You know, all the girls were singing songs about, you know, how demented they were because of lost love. And I knew that I was demented, but I didn't really want to sing about it.
Are there parts of Blondie that you felt you outgrew after a while?
Yeah, of course. I think that that's why, you know, the character is no longer really relevant to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, parts of it are, and I really loved being Blondie and doing that, but I wouldn't be able to just do that and nothing else. I mean, the character would obviously have to change, as I have changed.
What parts do you think you've kept?
Well, I think that I really like the energy of Blondie, you know, positiveness, and I like the aggressive qualities about her, and but the fact that she was like sort of a positive nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, you started off when you started performing dressing in this kind of trash chic, like outfits from the 60s, which I think you probably bought a lot at maybe at secondhand stores.
What, did you used to shop there too?
How did you know that? Was it kind of like out of necessity that you shopped that way when you started out, or was it a pure style statement?
Well, it was a style statement, and it sort of went hand in hand. I don't know which came first. It's like the chicken or the egg. I think that we wanted to wear the reverse of what was going on. We wanted to wear peg leg pants and narrow lapels, and I mean for the guys, and I wanted to wear minis and stuff like that. Minis are easy to achieve because you just chop off the bottom of a skirt, but you know, tapering bell bottoms into peg legs is sometimes a little bit awkward because of the way they're cut. And so we just happened to find a store in Hoboken, New Jersey, that had brand new clothes from the 60s that were, you know, still had the tags on, and they were amazingly cheap. So everybody just ran over there and ravaged the place.
And when that kind of style no longer became anti-style but actually came back into style, did you feel you had to start dressing a different way?
Well, by then it was too late.
I mean, the image had been set?
No, I didn't feel like I had to change anything. I was really amazed because, I mean, it was popular in New York, and then we came out to play the Whiskey, I think, in 76 or 77, and when we first got there, we were all dressed like that and with our skinny stuff and our minis and our skinnies, and everybody in the audience was all, you know, sort of dressed in bell-bottoms and floral print stuff, and like by the middle of the week, we played there for, I don't know, 7 days or something. And by the middle of the week, all the kids suddenly showed up, you know, dressed in black, wearing like skinny stuff, skinny minis.
that was
real funny. I didn't expect that to happen, but it did happen.
I want to play something else from the new record. The album's called Deaf, Dumb, and Blonde. My guest is Deborah Harry. And this is a song called Get Your Way. Do you want to say anything about it before we hear it?
I think the lyric is sort of self-evident. It's a, sort of a crossover kind of R&B dance funk tune. Chris wrote the music, and it's sort of dedicated to Iron Mike.
Okay, here we go. Get Your Way from Deborah Harry's new album, Deaf, Dumb, and Blonde. I know that Marilyn Monroe had an influence on you as a performer, on your image. What about as an actress? Do you think of yourself as being influenced at all by her in your acting?
Well, of course, I feel like she's such a tremendous impact on American culture, on world culture, and on film actresses in general, especially comedic actresses. I don't know if I would. At one point, I think that I probably was trying to imitate her, and I think imitation is the way that, you know, you learn. and the way that you sort of develop your own style. Yeah, I think that she had an amazing influence on me and on many other people.
You know, if we're talking about icons of the 50s, I think of you as having part Kim Novak in the sense of your reserve on screen.
Uh-huh. That's true. I think that I've sort of really absorbed all that stuff, all those great pictures and all those great stylish women. I think Carol Lombard is really a wonderful influence on actors too.
Is your bleached blonde hair a kind of lifelong homage to them?
Well, it's either that or Clairol. No, I think that I like the way it looks, and at one point, you know, it made me feel. I think it's an excitement. You know, there's an excitement quality to it, and I did experiment with hair color a lot in high school. That was. You know, one of my things, I really loved dyeing my hair, and I probably had it every color that you can imagine, even some that weren't listed on the charts.
You've done several movies in the past few years. We mentioned Wise Guy. You've also co-starred in Videodrome, in Union City, which was an independent film, and Hairspray. You were very funny. That's the only comedy I've seen you in. I'm sure you get a lot of roles that you turn down. What are you looking for in the roles that you accept? And what is it about the roles that you reject that you don't want?
Well, oddly enough, I never really wanted to play a singer. And when the part came up on Wise Guy to play a singer, and a singer who is sort of in a state of decrepitude, I really had sort of mixed feelings about doing that. Over the years, I got a lot of offers to do exploitation kind of films that were sort of, you know, crazy punk singer, you know, murders manager, you know, and has six or whatever, nine sex scenes and, you know, a couple of car chases kind of films, you know, and I really didn't want to do that. I really wanted to make an attempt to do parts that would make me work hard and make me have to really learn something and to be an actor, you know, to really work at what it is to do that. And that's what challenged me, and that's what interests me, and that's what interests me still.
What got you your break in acting?
I guess just the fact that I was a face, and that I was an item, you know, from the 70s. Mid-70s.
Mm-hmm. Blondie started off as a new wave band, one of the real popular bands at CBGB's in New York, and it ended up moving all the way up the charts. Did you scorn success, or did you want it when you were first getting started with Blondie?
Well, I think that it came as a bit of a surprise. You know, we didn't expect it to mushroom the way that it did, and you know, coming from an underground perspective and not being like a sort of like this mass marketed, you know, goal oriented kind of band, we certainly had our conflicts with that. I think that, oddly enough, you know, everyone kept saying at every stage of the game when we would sort of like climb up the ladder of success, I think that our contemporaries and our fans that sort of would say, oh, they're selling out again, they're selling out, they're selling out, they're selling out. And I guess we could just continue to sell out. So there you have it.
Did you feel that way personally at all?
Well, it became slightly absurd to me, you know, and I realized that there was no such thing as selling out, that it is a business. And I think that you can sell out. I guess you can lose your integrity or your sense of ethics, but I think that musically I have retained that, and Chris is a major factor in helping me do that.
I want to play a record that goes back to 1979. It's from your album Parallel Lines, which was on the charts for, I think, a really pretty long time. One of the songs from here was number one on the charts for a while. That was Heart of Glass. But this is I'm Gonna Get You. I really like this track a whole lot. Would you say anything about writing it? Would you tell us a little bit about writing it?
Heart of Glass.
No, I'm Gonna Get You. One way or another. I always call it I'm going to get you. It's one way or another.
One way or another.
Yeah.
Well, who did it? Did Nigel write that? Was that Nigel's music? Yeah, Nigel wrote that. And I don't know, that sort of just happened. I think that was sort of like a live thing. We were preparing the record. We were in a little room in the West 20s, and we were rehearsing. And Nigel came up with this thing, and everybody started sort of jamming on it. And I think that that's how the lyric came about. I just started singing it. I think it was pretty casual.
Okay, let's give it a listen. From the Blondie album of 1979, Parallel Lines, Deborah Harry is my guest. Throughout your years performing, you've had a really very sexy image. And I'm wondering if that ever worked against you within the record industry, in the sense that it's one thing to kind of be on stage and have that kind of image, but it's probably not the image that you want when you're actually dealing with corporate executives and, you know, making deals about records and rights and tours and things like that. You don't want to be seen as just as, you know, very, very sexy in that kind of negotiating position.
Hmm. Well, I think that times have changed, thank goodness. Out of necessity, I think that the corporate world has grown by leaps and bounds. I found it to be inhibitive. I think that for a long time, people would only talk to Chris, and they would ask him questions that I had the answers for, and then he would have to ask me, and then blah, 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 back and forth, which was very dull and very boring for both of us, and tedious and tiring. And that certainly went on for quite a while. And I think that, you know, sort of, you know, the guys want to be with the guys, you know, that kind of stuff, really, that definitely goes on. I think the girls want to be with the girls. You know, maybe someday, some people get it together. I mean, some people do business both ways and seem to enjoy it. So I guess everything is everything.
Well, how did you get out of that within the record industry? Did you change your image, or did you just try to draw the line about the difference between stage persona and who you really were?
I don't think that I did anything. I just continued to do what I do. And I think that that everything exists now. I mean, I get people talk. Sometimes guys talk to me and they talk to my chest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they never look me in the face. So that's it. I mean, and some people really talk to me and some people don't, you know, and that's just the way it is.
Do you think it should be possible to be able to have this really sexy stage image and yet not be treated as a sex object?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I sort of like being treated as a sex object. You know, I like being treated as an intelligent person. I like it all. You know, I wouldn't really want to be treated as one thing all the time. And I think that that's part of the reason that I don't do Blondie, you know, as like one character. I don't reserve myself or, you know, do like one treatment on stage anymore. It's because I found myself being treated like that character. And that was sort of unpleasant.
Has it been hard to break back into the record industry after being gone for several years?
It has been a little bit slow. It's been a little difficult. But that's, I mean, that's notorious. The showbiz, you know, that's what they say, you know.
What makes it hard?
I think that it just being visible and being available to people, and that's just the nature of the business. You have to be constantly sort of working and doing things, and I don't mean, you know, constantly to the point of, you know, so you're hysterical or whatever, but I think that you have to sort of be constantly working, and then it's not only important, you know, so that people don't forget you, but it's important for you because it keeps you good at what you do.
Are you taking things at a different pace now than you were before?
Well, no, actually, I'm touring and promoting this record and keeping really busy. So I don't know if that's any different pace. No, I think that I'm in full mode here.
Okay, Deborah Harry, I want to thank you very much for talking with us. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.